Now, in the last survey on the topic taken by Gallup, when asked if they believed in the devil, 61% of Americans of every kind answered yes. 27% of Americans of every kind responded no, and 12 responded not sure. Those kinds of statistics make preaching on the subject of the scriptures this morning a challenge. Over a third of us may think that Jesus could not have done what the scriptures record because we do not believe that the scriptures are recording a real event. So I'm going to ask you, if that is your mindset, to allow me a little latitude over the next few minutes, if you're skeptical, to show you a miraculous intervention of Jesus over something that the culture of his day saw as real and something that was wreaking havoc over a person's life. I don't want to argue whether or not demon possession is real. I want the scriptures to speak for themselves. And so I'm asking you just for a moment or two to think about what the scriptures are saying. The first thing that the scriptures show us is that we see the ruin from demon possession. That if demon possession is real, if the scriptures can be accounted as true, there is something that is going on in this man's life that is supernatural. Last week when we were in the scriptures, we were in Luke 8, 22 to 25. And Jesus is teaching, and then he says to the disciples, we should go to the other side of the lake. We should go to the other side of the sea. And last week we talked about the rising storm, the winds and the wave, and how God, Jesus, calmed the sea. But we're never told in those verses why. Now we know why. Jesus is going to the land across the Galilee in order to address this man's needs. Now, as we think about that just for a moment, and not even going into the details of what this man is experiencing, I want you to think about that for just a second. That Jesus was willing to go just for that one man. He changes his plans. He changes his location. He changes his demeanor and says, we need to go to the other side. And as he steps on land, he is encountered by this demon-possessed man. It is likely that the demon-possessed man did not immediately recognize that it was Jesus in the boat and was going to torment the person or people that came off the boat. We know from the scripture that once Jesus sees this man, Jesus speaks to him. Because we hear the man's conversation saying, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Please, I beg you, do not torment me. And it seems unlikely that that is taken completely out of thin air. That the demons recognize who Jesus is. They recognize his position, his authority, and what he is able to do in a moment, in an instant. But as we see this man, we see a man who is naked. Now, the scriptures technically say he had no outer garment. And it's possible that this is just saying he didn't have a coat. But really what it's saying is he had no clothing. And whether he was just in his underwear or completely naked really is not the point. The point is that here he is, undressed, vulnerable, exposed, outside of societal mores. I don't know about you, but if you were to go, not today, but when this pandemic is over, you were to go to Quincy Marketplace, downtown, or you were to go to the Ashmont train station, or you were to go anywhere, go to the mall, and there is a man in his underwear, you would think that something is wrong. But that's not all we see about this man. He is living among the tombs. He had no home. He had no place to live. He is living in and among the gravestones, a place of darkness and death. And then it says in the scriptures that this man has been numerous times seized, bound, but every time they seize him, every time they bind his hands and feet, he breaks the chains. He has some sort of supernatural power, strength. He is outside of the community. He is outside of sensibility. He is outside of the light. Outside of life. Satan has, in one form or fashion, destroyed every facet of this man's life. And the scriptures say that Satan is still active today. Ephesians 6:12, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." And so, we ought to be saying, the scriptures are clear that there is a battle going on among the powers of this age, amongst the powers of this dark world. And so why do only 61% of people believe in the reality of the devil? Because sometimes we want to underestimate the devil's influence. We want to say that we are responsible for our own actions, that we have the willpower to muster any attack, and to say that there is a force in the world that is stronger than us, that we can't readily identify immediately, is difficult for some. We also don't think about demon possession because why would we account for something that we are not 100% sure is real? And maybe the fact is that we deny the reality of a spiritual adversary, and that diminishes even the thought that something that is troubling us might have a spiritual component. But the danger is real. The danger of the destruction of human life through the work and workings of Satan is real. And whether it is demon possession, whether it is a swaying of the conscience, whether it is giving in to temptation, we need to be aware that the destruction is real, and that the only deliverance is through Christ. And that's what we see next. We see the release of a suffering soul. Jesus says to this man in verse 30, "What is your name?" Asked the demon, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. And they beg him to take not to let them go into the abyss. The demon's called Legion. Legion would have been 1,000 fighting men of the Roman army. And by saying it's Legion, he's saying that there are 1,000 of us. One of the other gospel writers, I think it's Mark, says that when the pigs go into the lake, not to spoil it, but when the pigs go into the lake, that 2,000 of them go in. One demon per pig. So there's thousands, perhaps, but it identifies itself as 1,000 fighting forces. And Jesus is just one man. One, but he was outnumbered, but never overpowered. Because we can see right from the beginning that Jesus' authority is never in question. They don't say, "Give us your best shot, Jesus. We can overpower you just like we overpowered him, Jesus." They don't say that. They say, "Don't cast us into the abyss. We know you're going to cast us somewhere. Don't send us back to the netherworld. Don't send us back to the lake of fire that has no end. We want to stay here on earth and have still some influence in the world." And so they beg him to send them into a herd of pigs. They see this herd of pigs feeding on the hillside, and they beg Jesus to let them go. And Jesus gives them permission to go there. And the demons are exorcised. The man is delivered. And they are cast into the pigs. The pigs then rush down into the sea and are destroyed, are drowned. And we say, "Those poor little pigs." And we have to ask ourselves, did Jesus destroy innocent animals?
And the answer is no. For two reasons, I think. The demons specifically asked, can we go into the pigs? And the demons drove the pigs to destruction. The same demons that were tormenting this man caused a whole herd of pigs to say, we're going and we would rather drown. Can you imagine the torment that this man was under? And these animals were raised for butchering. It is what a pig is raised for. Cows are raised for different things. Horses are raised for different things. Chickens would have flown away. Pigs are raised for food. And these demons, under Jesus' authority, were prevented from exerting any earthly influence. The pigs are destroyed. They would have been destroyed anyway. The demons are cast away. And likely they went into the abyss anyway. And the man is next seen sitting at Jesus' feet. And he is fully clothed. Whether they were his own clothes or another person's, we don't know. But he's no longer exposed, no longer vulnerable. And he is clear-minded. He has within him wisdom. Now, that could be the end of the story. It would be nice if that were the end of the story. Jesus comes across the lake, sees this man who is absolutely the epitome of being demonically tortured. And he casts out whatever is driving this person mad. And he is restored completely. But Luke is not content to simply share this man's restoration. He also wants to share the restorer's reception. Certainly the friends of this man, certainly the family of this man, would be filled with joy. Our brother was in a terrible state. And look at him now. Isn't this great? But that's not what happens, is it? We see the response many have to Christ. The residents of the region respond with a desire to reject. They were afraid. A number of times here, they are afraid. Verse 35, when they came to see Jesus, they found the man with whom the demons had gone, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Verse 37, then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, because they were overcome with fear. Literally, seized with fear. They had seized this man and bound him, and now they themselves are seized with fear. Now, some speculate that their fear was because of Jesus' power. Look at what this man can do. What's he going to do with me? What's he going to find out about me? What's he going to change in my life?
And I would rather just keep things the way they are. Other people speculate that Jesus was affecting their livelihood. That Jesus was demanding that we think about people over possessions. And they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to be denied or robbed of that opportunity.
Either way, they saw Jesus. They were afraid. And they turned away. They asked him to leave. Can you imagine? Leave. We're better off without you. Now, despite the man's restoration, they did, in fact, value the pigs over the man. They were, in fact, overconfident in their own abilities to control the situation. We would rather you not stay. Now, the restored man had quite a different response. Jesus gets into the boat. They ask him to leave. Jesus is willing to leave. And the man says, "Let me go with you. Let me stay with you. Let me be with you." And Jesus says, "No, I want you to go back to your home, back to your house, back to your people. And I want you to tell others what God has done for you." And he tells them how Jesus changed his life. Being in the presence of the Lord is sometimes a fearful place to be. The power of Jesus, the authority of Jesus, can be overwhelming. And the question is, will that presence of awe draw you closer, or will it turn you away? Our sermon in a sentence is this: there are many destructive forces in the world. Christ can deliver us from them all. Jesus crossed the sea to deliver a man that his people discarded. Jesus was not limiting this man's options, but rather showing the limits of human ability. No matter what the crowd, the people did, it didn't make things better. That there are times when we need Jesus. Jesus tells this once chained man to go home and tell others what God can accomplish. Can you imagine the story that this man had? "Hey, remember me? I was living out in the tombs. I was the naked guy. I was the one that people would run away from. People were afraid of. I'd break chains and break fetters. And I was out of my mind. But look at me now." And you want to know what happened? "Jesus came into my life. And he addressed my need and cleansed my soul. What Jesus did for that man in the tombs, he can do for all of us as well. Call it what you will. Whether it is addiction, mental illness, chemical imbalance, or demon possession, it is part of our world that there are broken people that modern medicine, modern psychiatry, modern intervention cannot seem to help. There are problems in this world that we cannot fix. And we need to face those fearful circumstances. And when we face them alone and allow them and our finite minds and what we can comprehend, we find that we are ill-equipped for the task. Or we can face them with Christ. What we are content to contain, Jesus came to conquer. How much of our lives are things that we are just willing and content to contain with it? Yeah, it's a problem, but I got it under control. Yeah, it's an issue, but I can handle it. Yeah, I know. I didn't do this thing right, but next time I will. Why are we so afraid to let Jesus deal with the things that are destroying us? There are many destructive forces in the world, and Christ can deliver us from them all. Let us pray.